Okay, today's daf is Bracha Daf Chaf Vav. We're at the bottom of Chaf Hey Amud Bet. First, I wanted to address the pasuk that we mentioned yesterday that compared the flesh of non-Jews to the flesh of a donkey for the purpose of asking the question whether or not you're allowed to read Kriyat Shema in front of an undressed non-Jew. And it's a very odd pasuk, and it's taken far out of context for the purpose of the limud, so I thought we should see the pasuk in its context to understand exactly what it's referring to. Yechezkel is essentially rebuking the Jewish people for their immoral sexual behavior at the time, that it modeled the immoral sexual behavior of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim. He was describing that behavior of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim when he said that they envied the flesh of the Egyptian concubines, which was like the flesh of donkeys. He's saying that you were so immoral in your sexual behavior that you envied the flesh of the Egyptian concubines, which was like the flesh of donkeys. In what way was their flesh like the flesh of donkeys? Well, flesh here, basar, is a euphemism for the male organ, and it was similar to the male organ of a donkey. So Rashi there in Yechezkel says that it chose a donkey specifically because a donkey is the most promiscuous of all animals, and therefore it describes that the flesh of the concubines, who were very promiscuous, was like the flesh of a donkey, because the donkey too was very promiscuous, so one's male organ was like the other's male organ. Now, it could be that Rashi was just privy to this information, that certainly a donkey would be the most promiscuous animal. I thought as well that perhaps you could suggest that chamor, a donkey, is the same shorish as chomer, which is physicality. So maybe it stands to reason that we say that the animal that is most involved in the most physical of all acts is the chamor, which is from the same shorish as physical, as chomer. Okay, now that we saw that pasuk, I want to pick up from where we left off yesterday at Amar Rav Yosef. Amar Rav Yosef, by my name Rav Huna, mita pchot b'shlosha, pshuta le dekelavu dami. Right, we're speaking about how disgusting things, if they're in your house and you want to say Kriyat Shema, they need to be covered up. Now, you can cover them up by putting them under your bed, but that's not always going to work because your bed has a gap between the bed and the ground because it's lifted up by the legs. So if the bed is close enough to the ground, then we'll consider it as if it's covered up. So what Rav Yosef says, it's obvious to me that if the bed is less than 3 tefachim off the ground, we consider it like it's covered up because the bed is so close to the ground. We don't generally see spaces, gaps that are less than 3 tefachim as being halachically significant. Similarly, see by a sukkah, you don't need solid walls in a sukkah, you just need strings that are separated by less than 3 tefachim, and we ignore the space in between them. So he says, that's obvious to me that if the bed was less than 3 tefachim off the ground, we would see it as if the disgusting thing underneath it was covered up, you could say Kriyat Shema underneath it. Shlosha, but if it's entirely 3, not less than 3. Arba, chamisha, shisha, shiva, shmona, teisha, mahu. So if it was between 3 and 9, does it count as if it was covered up as well? Or would you say the bed is too high off the ground so that it's not covering the disgusting thing underneath it and you can't say Kriyat Shema? Amar li lo yadana. And he said, I don't know, asara vadali bibayali. Right? But 10 is definitely too high that it wouldn't be considered covered. Abaye said, yeah, it's correct. It's right that you did not have a question regarding 10, that it was obvious that it's not considered covering the disgusting thing underneath it, because 10 is as if it's in its own domain. So Rava kind of wraps up the halacha of the sugya. He says, the halacha is that if it's less than 3, it definitely is considered covering up. If it's 10 or more, it's definitely considered not covered up. And 3 until 10, that's what Rav Yosef asked Rav Huna, and he didn't get an answer. So Rav says that you can't daven in front of something that's disgusting until you completely cover it up or take it out of the house, even if your house is very, very big. So similarly, he says, Rav says, no, the halacha is not like Rav Shimon ben Elazar. The halacha is like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Rav acha i'asek le'libere be Rav Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Marta. So Rav acha married off his son to the daughter of Rav Yitzchak. Ayle chubav lo'av mistaya milta. So they had the chuppah, but he was unable to consummate the marriage. So when Rabbi Chai heard this, he went to find out what the problem was, why his son may not have been able to consummate the marriage. So he went to go check it out, and he found that there was a Sefer Torah in the room that they were sleeping in. Said, had I not come, you would be jeopardizing my son's health or my son's well-being. Why? And because a house that has a Sefer Torah or tefillin in it, you're not allowed to have marital relations until you take the Sefer Torah out or the tefillin out, or you put them inside a case inside of another case. So what he concluded was that his son was unable to consummate the marriage as divine providence, that he shouldn't have done this aveira by sleeping with his wife in a room with a Sefer Torah. So we only taught that you can put a Sefer Torah or tefillin in a kli b'toch kli, basically two surrounding vessels, if it wasn't a vessel built for it that's still identifiable, that's what it is. It has to be a completely different vessel, like putting it in a bag within another bag. That works. Amarava Glima Kamatra Kiklibitov Kli Dami. Is a coat or a garment around a basket of books is like a kli inside of a kli. Amarav Shuvin Levi says that you need to make a separation 10 tvachim high between you and the Sefer Torah if it's going to be in the same room as you. Marzutra Iklibe Rav Ashi Khazala Duchte Marva Rav Ashi the Manach Bay Sefer Torah of Avid Levichitza Sara. So Marzutra was in Rav Ashi's house, and he saw the place that he sleeps, and there's a Sefer Torah there, but there's a partition that was 10 tvachim high. Amar Lekiman, Rav Shuv ben Levi, says, whom do you hold like? By whom do you hold? Do you hold like Rav Shuv ben Levi with building a 10 tvachim separation, works to separate between you and the Sefer Torah if you want to go to sleep? Amar Rav Shuv ben Levi, Lebe Beita Achrite, Mar Ha Itle Beita Achrite. So that was what Rabbi Shimon ben Levi said, that you can build a 10 tefach separation between you and the Sefer Torah. That's only if you don't have a different room to put it in. But you have a different room to put it in, so you're not allowed to sleep here, even though it's a 10 tefach separation. Amar lei lavadate, he said, oh, I didn't know. It could be that I didn't know, or I just didn't notice that he was there, or lavadate means that's not my opinion, meaning I hold differently. I hold that inachanami, even l'chachila, you're allowed to sleep here with a separation of 10 tefachim. Kami archik me'en, amina tzohar b'amor. So how far do you have to distance yourself from excrement in order to daven? For amor. Amarava, sechora, amaravuna. It's only if the excrement is behind the bed. However, if it's in front of the bed, then you have to go so you can no longer see it. And similarly, you have to go away from it so you can't see it anymore if it's in front of the bed, even for tefillah, not just for kriyat shema. Is that really the case? You have to go that far away just to daven? The ha'amar of Rav Bar Papa, amar of Chizda, omer adam keneged bit hakiseh with palel. That didn't we teach that you're allowed to stand in front of the bathroom and daven? But no, we taught that only by a bathroom that didn't currently have excrement in it. It was a clean bathroom, so you're fine that you're allowed to. Aini, is it really true that you're allowed to if it's a clean bathroom? Right, when we taught that you're not allowed to daven in front of a beit hakise, we meant even if it doesn't have excrement in it, and we taught that you're not allowed to daven in front of a bathhouse, we taught even if there's not an undressed person inside of it. So seemingly it shouldn't matter whether it was clean or not clean. And rather, no. What are we dealing with here? They said you're allowed to daven in front of the bathroom. It's new. It was never used before. It was literally never used as a bathroom before. That's when you're allowed to. Wait, but does that help you to say that? Because how are you so confident that if a bathroom has never been used before, you're allowed to daven in front of it? But this was a very difficult question for Ravina when he tried to answer it. He said, if you designated something as a bathroom, but have yet to use it, does it count as a bathroom, meaning you can't daven there? Or does it not count as a bathroom? He didn't know. It was a suffix. So why are you so confident that if it had never been used before, that's what we're talking about, that you're allowed to daven there? So Ravina, this is a big question. He couldn't answer it. No, Ravina was asking, can I daven inside of it if it's been designated as a bathroom but not yet used? He wasn't asking, can I daven in front of it? We were talking about davening in front of it where it's mutter. Amarava, Hani Bata Kisa de Barzaya, Vagavdi Ibu, Tsoa, Kistubin Davu. Right? These bathrooms of the Persians. If you recall, Rabbi Akiva actually praised the Persians for their tzniut when they went to the bathroom. I wonder if this was what he was talking about. But the bathrooms of the Persians are built in such a way that the hole is built on a slant, on a diagonal, so the excrement does not stay there when you go to the bathroom. It goes out immediately. In fact, some people would like to use that as a raya. Some modern achronim, modern poskim, like to use that as a raya, that our bathrooms, which you flush, should not be considered like the bathrooms of old. It seems like a decent raya, except for the fact that there's one primary difference that the poskim point out, that there, it would never sit there after you went to the bathroom, but ours, it sits there for a little bit until you flush it, so it may not be a very good raya. Matnitin, last mishnah of the perek, zav shara kerev v'nida shepata shechlet zerev v'shvesh sharata nida tzuchetvila rehu repoter. We saw this mishnah beforehand, we saw it last Shabbat, and these are the three types, the three cases where someone is both tamei tumat keri, they had a seminal emission, or were made tamei by someone else's seminal emission, but they also had tuma of nida or of zav, such that if they went to the mikvah for their tumat keri, they would leave still tamei because they're still zav or nida. So the Tanakhama says the eni achanami, they still have to go to the mikvah even though they're going to leave tamei. Rav Yehuda says no, they don't have to go to the mikvah for their keri because when they leave, they're still going to be tamei. The Gemara asks a question on Rav Yehuda: Ibai lehu bal keri shirazi v'la Rav Yehuda mahu? If someone was a Balkari and then he became a Zab. I mean, Rabbi Yehuda spoke about a case where you're a Zab and then you're a Balkari. The difference is, if you were a Balkari and then you became a Zab, you had the opportunity to go to the mikvah, you became chayav to go to the mikvah, and then you became a Zab, so it wouldn't really help to go to the mikvah. As opposed to what Rabbi Yehuda taught, where you were a Zab first, so you never had the opportunity to go to the mikvah, so you never would have been chayav. So, Mahu, Kipato Rabbi Yehuda, Hatam Zab Shara Keri, the Mikara, Lav Bartzvilahu, Aval Balkari Shara Ziva, the Mikara Bartzvilahu, Mikhayav Adima Loshna. So, Rabbi Yehuda only part of the Zab from going to the mikvah when he was a Zav first and then he was a Balkari, so he was never obligated to go to the mikvah? Or did he say that even if a Balkari who afterward became a Zav, who had the opportunity to go to the mikvah, even he would be Pater, he wouldn't have to go? Tashma, I'll bring a proof. Someone who slept with her husband and became Tamei Tumat Keri, and then she became Anida, she needs to go to the mikvah. Rabbi Yehuda Pater, and Rabbi Yehuda is Pater in that case. And someone who sleeps with her husband and then becomes Anida is the exact same case as a Balkari who only after becomes a Ziva, meaning their Tuma, which extends 7 days, only came after their Tuma of Balkari. So I have a great raya from here. The Rabbi Yehuda would say that even if you were a Balkari first and then became a Zav, you wouldn't have to go to the mikvah of Kapata, Rabbi Yehuda, Shvamina. So Rabbi Yehuda in that case patters it. So similarly, she patters it by a Balkari who afterward became a Zav. Tanya, Rabbi Chiya Beheder. Rabbi Chiya actually taught this not as an inference from Rabbi Yehuda's Shita from the latter part of the Mishnah. Rather, he taught it as this is what Rabbi Yehuda said explicitly. Balkari Shara Ziva Tzarech Tvila, Rabbi Yehuda Poter. That a Balkari who only after he was a Balkari became a Zav, he needs to go to the mikvah according to the Tanakama, and Rabbi Yehuda is Poter. Hajan Lach, Mishameto. Now, we're going to start the fourth parak of Brachot, which is a very special parak to my heart, because this is the first parak of Shas I ever learned way back in sixth grade. Tfilat Shachar Ad Chatzot Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ad Arba Shot. So, you have until the fourth hour of the day to... Of course, back in fourth grade, I really only learned maybe the first Amud, but still, this is the first Sugi and Shas I ever learned. Tfilat Shachar Ad Chatzot. So you have until Chatzot to say Shacharit. Rabbi Yehuda says you only have until the fourth hour to say Shacharit. Tfilat Mincha Ad Ha'erev. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ad Plag Mincha. So you have until the evening to say Mincha. But Rabbi Yehuda says you have until what's called Plag HaMincha, halfway through Mincha. We're going to talk about what that means in the next Amud. Tfilat Ha'erev in La Keva. And Mariv has no set time; it can be said the entire evening. Gishon Musafim Kol Yom. And similarly, Musaf can be said the entire day. Gemara. We're going to raise a contradictory statement. Mitzvah Tayyim HaNetzachama. That Shacharit is a mitzvah to say together with sunrise. That way you can say Kriyat Shema together with sunrise, and then you could Somech, the bracha of Geula, you could say Geula right next to your tefillah, and daven during the daytime and an appropriate time to daven. So seemingly you're supposed to daven right after sunrise, and not until the fourth hour of the day. Kitania Hidla Vatikin. No, that was only taught for the practice of the Vatikin. Damar Biyochan Vatikin, Ayugomir Time in Itzachama. That the Vatikin would say Kriyat Shema together with the Netzach Hama and then daven immediately afterward. That was their practice, but that's not the halacha. You have obviously until either the fourth hour or Chatzot to say Shacharit. The Kule Alma and Chatzot Betulo, but does everyone agree that you only have until Chatzot and you don't have any more time to say Shacharit? V'amar Rav Mari, Bereder Rav Huna, Bereder Rav Yirmiyah, Barava, Amar Rav Yochanan, Tavlo Et Pal, Arvid, Mitvalo, V'Shacharit, Shtayim. But didn't we learn that if someone makes a mistake and he's not Davin Mariv, he's allowed to say two Shacharits to make up for the fact that he didn't say Mariv, and that's a Tashlumin, it makes up for the fact that he missed Mariv. Shacharit Pal, Mincha, Shtayim. And if you miss Shacharit, you say two Minchas. So seemingly you have an entire day to say shacharit, right? Because if you can make up your missed shacharit by saying two minchas, then seemingly that you can daven the entire day. No, what we meant to say is like this: until chatzot, you get the reward, the schar of saying tefillah in its appropriate time. Afterward, you get the reward for saying tefillah, but you don't get the reward for saying tefillah in its appropriate time. If you missed mincha, you're allowed to say two marivs, shtayim. You may have said that the reason why you can make up Mariv by saying two shacharits is because it's all the same day, because the day starts from the evening, and therefore Mariv and shacharit is in the same day, but mincha and Mariv would not be the same day. But mincha and Mariv are not in the same day, and by the korbanot, we know that if you miss the korban that you give in the afternoon, you're not allowed to do it at night, because you missed the time for bringing the korban, and so you can no longer bring it at all. Maybe we should say the same thing about saying mincha odil makivan detzluta rachmihi kol emad debayim matziu v'azil. Or maybe you want to say that it doesn't matter that you missed the proper day to say mincha and that we're in a new day, because tefillah is about asking Kodesh Baruch Hu for rachamim, for mercy, and any time is an appropriate time for asking Kodesh Baruch Hu for mercy. It's not like a korban that has one very, very specific time. Tashma, I'll try to answer the question for the following proof. Alright, that's a pretty good proof. We have an explicit statement from Rav Huna that if you made a mistake and you didn't daven mincha, you're allowed to say to marivs, and you don't have to be concerned that you missed it like you would miss a korban by not bringing the afternoon at the appropriate time. Meitive, we're going to raise an objection to that statement. Ma'avat lo yochol litkon v'chaseron lo yochol lihimanot. Right? Something that was crooked cannot be straightened, and something that is lacking cannot be counted. What does that mean? Ma'avat lo yochol litkon zeh shebitel kriyat shema shel arvit, kriyat shema shel shacharit, tefillah shel arvit, tefillah shel shacharit. Right? It's something that is crooked that cannot be straightened, meaning something that was wrong that cannot be corrected, is when you didn't say kriyat shema or tefillah of mariv or of shacharit. V'chaseron lo yochol lihimanot zeh shenim nuchaverot v'arvit. That is talking where someone is lacking, is not able to be counted. That's talking about when someone's friends come to a consensus that they're going to say that they're going to do a mitzvah and you don't participate. What we see from there is seemingly missing davening of Mariv or of Shachar cannot be corrected. So how is it that beforehand we taught that you can correct them by just saying the next davening twice? Right? No, that's talking about when you intentionally did not say them. If you intentionally skip Mariv, you knew it was Mariv, and you're like, nah, I'm not going to say it tonight. You cannot make that up by saying Shachar. It's only if it's an accident. Amar Rav Ashi, Dekanami. Similarly, I can actually infer this from the mission, from the teaching itself. Tekatani Batav, lo katani tosh, mamina. Because the contradictory, the objection statement that you brought said bitel, meaning you canceled it out. You did not say the tefillah of Mari or of Shachar, but you did not say mistaken. Our Mishnah said you made a mistake and you didn't say Shachar, you're allowed to say two minchas. You made a mistake and you didn't say Mari, you're allowed to say two shachars. But batel means you intentionally didn't do it. That's when it doesn't work. That's when you don't have tashlumin. Tanu Rabbanan tavloi tepelam mincha be'erev Shabbat mitpelam b'leil Shabbat shtayim shel Shabbat, adds the Gra. So if you didn't say mincha on erev Shabbat, then you're allowed to make it up on Shabbat itself, even though it's a different Shemona Esrei. You still say two Shemona Esreis of Shabbat. Tavloi tepelam mincha be'Shabbat mitpelam motzei Shabbat shtayim. If you didn't say mincha of Shabbat, you say motzei Shabbat shtayim shel chol. You say two weekday davenings. However, what you're going to see is that there's a unique thing about Mariv and Motzei Shabbat that you say Havdalah in a Tachonin. Mavdil b'Rishon v'Enu Mavdil b'Shniyah. So what do? You say Havdalah in the first of the Shemona Esreis, and you don't say Havdalah in the second of the Shemona Esreis, because the first of the Shemona Esreis is always the one that's being said in its appropriate time, and the second of the Shemona Esreis is always the Tashlumin. V'Mavdil b'Shniyah v'Lo Yavdil b'Rishon v'Shniyah Alta Lo Rishon v'Alta. And if you said the Havdalah in the second of the Shemona Esreis, so the second one constitutes a proper tefillah, but the first one is like you never davened because you didn't say Havdalah in it. But are you suggesting that someone who didn't say Havdalah in Shmona Esrei is as if they didn't say it at all and you have to repeat it? But I have a contradictory statement. If you didn't mention the tefillah for rain in their appropriate brachos of Gevurah Gishamim and Birkat Hashanim, you have to repeat it. You have to go back and say Shmona Esrei again. If you don't say Mashi Bracha Moed Geshem, you say Shmona Esrei again. Havdalah B'chanan Adat in Machzir Nato. But if you didn't say Havdalah in Chanan Adat and Motzei Shabbat, You don't go back and say it, Mipnei Sheichol HaOmra Al HaKos, because you could just say Avdallah on a kos. You could say Avdallah on a cup of wine, right? So you don't have to go back and say it because you can make up Avdallah elsewhere. Kasha, that is indeed a difficult contradictory statement. As the Rush points out, well, first of all, you have to realize that Kasha is not Tufta. Tufta means we have rejected your Shita. Your Shita is illogical. We no longer accept it. Kasha is not that we've rejected your Shita. It's just there's a difficulty. Maybe you'll find a way to answer it. Maybe not, but it's difficult. The Rush points out that I have a great way to answer it, right? You can't compare a normal case of saying Mariv on Motzei Shabbat without Havdalah to our case here. In a normal case, yes, you can, you daven Shemoneh Esrei properly, you said the right Shemoneh Esrei, you daven it properly, you left out Havdalah, so make up Havdalah later. But our case is different. Why? Because our case, you're davening two Shemoneh Esreis, and the first Shemoneh Esrei that you daven needs to be the appropriate Motzei Shabbat Shemoneh Esrei, and the second Shemoneh Esrei that you daven is the Tashlumin. You're davening it because you missed Mincha, and that Davka needs to be the second Shemoneh Esrei. If you would say by the first Shemoneh Esrei that I am davening this first Shemoneh Esrei as Tashlumin for Mincha, it wouldn't work as a Mar Shemoneh Esrei, and it wouldn't work as a Mincha Shemoneh Esrei, because it's not supposed to be your first Shemoneh Esrei must be your Motzei Shabbat Shemoneh Esrei, only your second Shemoneh Esrei is your Tashlumin for Mincha. Therefore, if you didn't say Havdalah in the first Shemoneh Esrei, that seems like you're making the first Shemoneh Esrei into the Tashlumin where you weren't supposed to say Havdalah at all. So, because it's not that it doesn't count as Shemoneh Esrei because you didn't say Havdalah in it. It doesn't count as Shemoneh Esrei because it seems like you're making it into your Tashlumin Shemoneh Esrei, which it's not allowed to be. That, says the Rosh, is how I would have answered the question. Itma Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina Amar Tzvilot Avot Tiknum Rabbi Shubin Levi Amar Tzvilot Keneged Tamid Tiknum. So this is one of the most famous machlokets in the Masechta as to where Tzvilot come from. According to Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina, the Tzvilot are opposite there that our forefathers davened. They established the Tzvilot we've been davening ever since. Rabbi Shubin Levi says no, the Tzvilot were established opposite the korbanot that we used to bring every single day. Tanakh Vatei Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina Tanakh Vatei Rabbi Shubin Levi. There's one bright that supports Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina's statement. Rabbi Yosef Shita, and there's one bright that supports Rabbi Shubin Levi's Shita. Okay, let's see those brightas. Tanakh Vatei Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina Avram Tiken Tefillah Shachrit. Right, the bright that is taught in accordance with Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina's Shita says Avram established the Tefillah of Shachrit. Shneimar, it's stated Vayashkem Avram Bebokeh LaMakom Asher Amad, that Avram got up in the morning to that place which he stood. Shan. The Ein Amida El Tefillah, and Amida is indicative of Tefillah. Shneimar v'yamar Pinchas v'yipala. Pinchas stood and he davened. So because it says that Pinchas davka stood and davened, we see the association between the words Amad, stood, and davened. So when it says that Abraham got up in the morning to stand, we assume that he got up in the morning to daven. So Abraham was the first one to daven in the morning. So we daven in the morning because Abraham davened in the morning. Yitzchak tiken Tefillah Mincha. Shneimar v'yatzar Yitzchak stu l'soda. Leave no error. So Yitzchak was the one who established the tefillah of the afternoon, as it says that Yitzchak went out to the field lasuach to have a conversation of sorts before the evening, meaning in the afternoon. Okay, so he had a siach in the afternoon. What does that mean? Ve'en siach el tefillah, and siach is the word sicha. Indicate, or the word sicha is a hint to the word, to tefillah, to davening. Shemar has stated, tefillah la nikiyatof of Bnei Hashem yishpoch sicho. Right? In the context of saying a tefillah, it says that you will pour out your siach to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So clearly, siach is a reference to tefillah, and when Yitzchak had a siach before the evening, he was davening, so we daven in the afternoon because Yitzchak davened in the afternoon. Yaakov tiken tefillah at Arvin. So Yaakov established the tefillah of Marv. Shemar, v'yifka b'makom v'ilan shah. Right? So at night, it says by Yaakov, that he was pogea bimakom. What does that mean? And pogea el tefila. The word pogea is indicative of tefila. How do you know the word pogea is indicative of davening? Shneimar vata al tipalel ba'adam hazeh. Don't daven on behalf of this nation. Ve'al tisa ba'adam rina b'tefila. Ve'al tifga bi. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said not to daven on behalf of the nation, he also said don't be pogea on behalf of the nation. So pogea, the shoresh pei gimel ayin, indicates tefila. So when Yaakov was pogea at night, it must mean that he was davening at night. So we daven at night because Yaakov davened at night. Tanakh Vatei Rabbi Shubin Levi. Now we're going to teach a braita that is a support for the opinion of Rabbi Shubin Levi that the tefillah were established opposite the Korbanot. Why do they say that we have until Chatzor to say Shachar? Because the Tamid of Shachar, the Korban that we bring every morning, was brought until Chatzor. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, at Arba Shot, Shachar, Tamid Shal Shachar, Karav Holech, at Arba Shot. Rabbi Yehuda says the reason why we can only say Shachar until 4 hours into the day, because the Korban that we brought in the morning can only be brought until 4 hours of the day. So seemingly they see fit to associate the hours of Shachar with the hours of the korbanot. And why is it that you can daven mincha until the evening, until sunset? Because the afternoon korban could be brought until sunset. And Rabbi Yehuda said you can daven mincha until plaga mincha, until half mincha. We'll talk about what that means. Because the korban of the afternoon can be brought until half mincha. And why is it that Marav had no set time, rather you can do it all night? Because the excess limbs and fats from the korbanot, which weren't burnt up during the day, can be burnt up the entire evening. And why can you say Musaf all day? Because the korban Musaf could have been brought the entire day. And similarly, Ryuda says that you can daven Musaf until the seventh hour of the day, because the korban Musaf could have been brought until the seventh hour of the day. So just for a little bit of background, right? Mincha, there are two types of mincha. There's mincha gedola and mincha ketana. Mincha gedola is the earliest time you could have brought the korban shel bein ha'arbaim. If you need to bring it early, you're allowed to bring it at this point. And then there's mincha ketana. Mincha ketana is the normal time they would bring the korban shel bein ha'arbaim. And why is it called gedola and why is it called ketana? It's called gedola because at that point you still have most of the afternoon left, so it's a larger period of time. And it's called ketana because at that point you have less of the afternoon left, so it's a smaller period of time. And we're asking, okay, now what was the earliest time to say mincha? And what is the normal time to say mincha? Mishesh sha'or u'mechza u'lamala. Right, so from the 6.5 hour and onward, that is mincha gedola. The ezahi, so it's basically half hour after chatzot. The ezahi mincha ketana miteish shor mechta lemala. Right, and what is mincha ketana from 9.5 hours until sunset? Ibai lehu Rabbi Yehuda plag mincha kama amar or plag mincha achrona kamar. Right, was when Rabbi Yehuda said plag mincha halfway through mincha, was he talking about halfway through mincha where you start from mincha gedola, or halfway through mincha where you start from mincha ketana? So to understand that question, first we have to understand what exactly plag mincha is. Plag mincha, which literally translates to half mincha, is basically when half of your time for saying mincha has passed. Rabbi Yehuda believes that you have up until half of your time to say mincha. It sounds a little bit odd, but basically Rabbi Yehuda takes the Rabbanan's time for saying mincha and cuts it in half. Meaning, Rabbi Yehuda says, that which the Rabbanan say, that you have until sunset, that is the Rabbanan's time for mincha. I say you have half of that to say mincha. That is plaga mincha. It is half of the Rabbanan's shita. And so, if you say it's from the mincha gedola, what that means is as follows, right? If mincha gedola is 6.5 hours into the day, it's half hour after chatzot, and sunset is at the 12th hour, you're left with 5.5 hours between the beginning of mincha gedola and sunset. Half of that amount of time would be 2 hours and 3/4. So you tack 2 hours and 3/4 onto 6.5 hours when you can start, and you reach 9 hours and 1/4. 9 hours and 1/4 would therefore be plag hamincha, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, the final time to say mincha, if you hold that he's speaking about halfway through mincha, which starts at mincha gedola. But what if you say he's speaking about halfway through mincha, which starts at mincha ketana? Well, then you'd have to say that mincha ketana starts at 9.5 hours into the day. You have until 12 hours, which is sunset, to say mincha, in which, according to the Rabbanan, in which case you'd be left with 2.5 hours between mincha ketana and sunset. So half of that amount of time is 1/4, which would mean that it's 1/4 after mincha ketana and 1/4 before sunset, making it the 10th hour and 3/4 of an hour into the day. So if you hold that he's talking about plag mincha halfway through mincha, starting from mincha ketana and going to sunset, then you have until 10 3/4 hours into the day in order to say mincha. So which one does he hold? Is he starting from mincha gedola, or is he starting from mincha ketana? Tashmar, Tanir Bihuda, Omer, plaga mincha achrona, amru, bihiyud alef shaor, chaser, revia. No, it was explicitly taught in a brayta that Rabbi Yehuda taught that plag ha mincha, that the halfway through mincha is the halfway through the second period of Mincha, which is 10 hours and 10 3/4 hour into the day. So that's a pretty clear raya that that Rabbi Yehuda goes on the second part of Mincha. Name it Avituta to Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina. Maybe we can use this as a kashya for Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina, because the moment we said that all the tefillot were established opposite the korbanot, meaning all their times aligned with the times of the korbanot, becomes very difficult for Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina to maintain the shita that it was not established opposite the korbanot. That's just too big of a coincidence. No, what I really meant to say is as follows. The Ava were metakein the tefillot. They established the tefillot, we daven because they daven. We don't daven because we brought korbanot. The two, what do the two have to do with each other? Truth is, the two have a lot to do with each other. But for argument's sake, what do the two have to do with each other? Right? Rather, we daven because the avot davened, and the rabbanon set their times in accordance with the korbanot. Dilo temehachi, because if you didn't hold that Rabbi Yossi would say that the rabbis established the times in accordance with the korbanot, but still maintains that the avot were metaken them. Right? How would he explain away the tefillah of Musaf? Right? What was Musaf offered? We never see that one of the Avot daven Musaf. Rather, it has to be from a korban. So Rabbi Yossi would say the Avot were metaken the tefillah, but the zmanim, their times, were in accordance with the korbanot. I want to stop here, but I do want to, even though we're about at 30 minutes, I don't want to rob you of this beautiful, beautiful pshat that I heard from Rabbi Yonasan Sachs. L'chora, you could ask a very, very difficult kasha on Rabbi Yossi's shita, because Rabbi Yossi, who holds the avot or metak in the tefillot, how does he explain why Mariv, halachically, is considered permissive, not anymore, now it's an obligation because of all Klal Yisrael accepted upon itself, but initially, Mariv was a reshut. You had the option of davening Mariv, but you did not have the obligation of davening Mariv. According to Rabbi Yossi's shita, that's very difficult because Mariv, seemingly you should have no reason to differentiate it from the other tefillot. Whereas according to the shita that they're opposite the korbanot, you have an excellent reason why you differentiate Mariv, because the burning of the evarim, the burning of the fats and the limbs at the end of the day, that was also a reshut. In which case, it makes sense that the korban in the morning is an obligation, the korban in the afternoon is an obligation, so shachar and minchar an obligation. Burning the extra fats and limbs is a reshut, so Mariv should be reshut. But according to Rabbi Yossi, why would he mechalek between Mariv, Shachar, and Mincha? Seemingly they all should be obligations because the Avot were metakin them. According to Rabbi Yonatan Sachs, though, you can give a wonderful answer why, even according to Tfilot Avot Tiknum, that they are opposite the Tfilot of the Avot, there's an excellent answer why even Mariv would be a reshut in accordance to that Shita. Why is that? Well, it's machloket Rambam Ramban as to whether or not Tfilah is deoraita. According to the Rambam, Tfilah is deoraita. It's from the Torah. According to the Ramban, Tfilah is derabanan. However, even the Ramban agrees that tefillah is deoraita b'makom tzar. When you're in a time of particular distress, tefillah takes upon a deoraita status. You have to daven, or it's a mitzvah deoraita from the Torah to daven if you're particularly distressed. Now we know why we should differentiate between Mariv, Shachar, and Mincha, even if you say that the Avot are talking the tefillah. It's because when Avraham davened in the morning, he just woke up and davened. There was nothing particularly distressing going on. So when he davened because he was creating the morning davening. When Yitzchak davened in the afternoon, there was nothing distressing going on. He was just davening. So we say he created this new thing called Mincha. When Yaakov was davening, he was running away from Esav who was trying to kill him. Yaakov was distressed. So we don't know if he was establishing, creating something new called Mariv, or maybe he was just davening because it was a pre-existing concept of davening under a time of distress, which you could not say by Avraham and Yitzchak, who were not distressed at all. So even behold by the Ramban Shita, that tefillah is derabanan when it's a normal tefillah, but tefillah is deoraita when it's time of distress, and Yaakov was only davening because he was under distress, so maybe he wasn't creating a new thing called Mariv, he was just davening because under distress. And though for our purposes, we would say that Mariv is a permission, it's a reshut, because we don't know if Yaakov meant to establish that Ledorot.